Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and the man making those scary noises is JB.
I am the ghost of what JB used to be.
I'm sorry, the ghost of what JB used to be.
The man he used to be before he was emasculated by his job and by strangers and by circumstance. Ooh.
Weirdest ghost ever. Emasculated by circumstance. The JB story.
That ghost has an elephantine vocabulary.
Happy scary movie month. We are winding down.
We're in the home stretch,
there
babies.
There are only a few days left. Halloween is coming up. And now JB will sing his rendition of Four More Days Till Halloween.
Four more days till Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Four more days till Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
That was pretty good for being on the spot. This is our annual movie marathon show, scary movie marathon show. Used to be the Massacre podcast because we used to attend the Massacre here in Chicago for the 24-hour horror movie marathon. And then that kind of split off, and there was one Massacre and one Music Box of Horrors.
Yes.
And you were going to the Massacre, and then for a few years I've just watched movies here. And we've talked about that. This year, neither one of us is really representing the Massacre. I know you were there for part of it.
Yes, so, but if you're interested in the Massacre, Adam wrote a terrific column where I thought in an even-handed way, he talked about the Massacre. In all fairness, the people behind the Massacre were sort of forced to find another venue.
Right.
And I think they still haven't found the perfect venue,
right?
Because the Portage had some advantages and some big disadvantages, and now the patio has advantages and disadvantages. What I was ignoring, and I brought this up to my lovely wife on our way to the Music Box of Horrors, was that the Music Box is this very special place, and it's not that it's enchanted or anything, but
no, it is.
I had forgotten that. A lot of the charm of the original Massacre was that it was at the happiest place on earth.
Right. Again, you know, the Massacre was sort of displaced, and the other two theaters here in Chicago that could host it essentially shut down in the years since, and they've half reopened now, but neither one is really like a functioning movie theater.
In the words of our very own Adam Risky, you sit there and you wait for the wrecking ball to come through the wall. And I know a big bone of contention in the Massacre this year was that people got there and suddenly they were told that no outside food would be allowed. And that's fine if you announce it in advance, but apparently the organizers did not know in advance that that was going to be the theater's policy. And you really can't expect people to spend 24 hours in a theater without bringing some food, because you can't live on pizza and popcorn. And it made me wonder, what's next? There will be no outside water.
No blankets. No sleeping bags.
No pillows.
Bathrooms are closed.
But on that same
I'm going to punch you in the nose.
And we'll get to this when we talk about the Music Box of Horrors, because I have some really good news. The Music Box had food trucks come out to the alley behind the theater, and the food was really, really good. Yeah. I mean, like, this is. But talking to people, and I don't know how often you've eaten from a food truck.
Not that often. It's my like wife loves them.
The people who do food trucks are so extra motivated. It's like you really never get bad food from a food truck.
Yeah.
That whatever you have to put in place to do a food truck. And anyway, we'll get to the food trucks.
When we were in Austin last summer, I think the best food we ate the whole time was off of a food truck parked in a parking lot.
And you've gone to that thing, or have you?
Yeah, I have.
There's a minor league baseball stadium by our house, and once a year they have like food truck palooza. I don't know what I was doing, but I missed the last one.
Well, now they're charging admission just to go to that. because it was so crowded. Well, whatever. We're off topic, everyone. The point is, I
this usually doesn't happen until an hour in.
I didn't feel right about calling this the Massacre Podcast since we're sort of co-opting.
What are we?
Another
call
name?
It?
I don't know. Scary Movie Marathon. Who knows? We both did versions of marathons. Nothing compared to what we've done in the past. But so that's what we're going to be talking about this week as we wrap up Scary Movie Month. Before we do that, though, I know we have a couple more 7-word reviews to read from the Scary Movie Challenge. If you're not familiar with the Scary Movie Challenge, go to fthismovie.net. Anytime you watch a scary movie in the month of October, write a 7-word review, and they're fun. And there are thousands of them, so you can read them to get an idea.
Have you done a count?
I've not.
I almost did before I came,
yeah.
But I'm not good at math, and it would be way off.
This was my concern about the way that it was, and I recognize that like the way that it's structured this year is a lot easier for everyone instead of having to scroll through thousands of comments. Every day there's a new post, so you can see the most recent ones. The one disadvantage is that then we have to add them all up, but you know. Wow. Anyway, so Jay Bones, I know you have a few. Go ahead and read your first one.
Mac McIntyre on Christine. He writes, I want to see Christine fighting Decepticons.
Michael Piccoli of the Hatchet Murders. Not a single murder involves a hatchet.
I remember. my wife was reading them out loud the other night, and she read that one out loud. Daniel Epler. This is actually along the same theme as the one you just read. Daniel Epler on House on Haunted Hill. Neither the house nor hill is haunted.
Saul says of We Are What We Are, daughter can't stomach her father, then can.
And I have another Saul, Exorcist 3. I'm going to try and capture the spirit of this one because I really liked it. This is our friend Saul in Exorcist 3. Good, but not scary so far. Holy motherfucking shit. Please note that last was one word.
Right.
That's one word.
That's so why
that
it counts.
Break the rules.
Dan Snyder of Stage Fright from 2014 liked it, but not in that way.
Cosmo Wallace on Human Centipede. This might be my favorite one. Did you pick this one too?
No, I didn't, but I know what it is.
Cosmo Wallace on Human Centipede. What's the middle girl trying to say?
Catherine Silliman of The Babadook. Family replaces dog with children's book monster.
And did I talk about this on the podcast? Last Thursday, the film club at my school screened The Babadook in my classroom, and I stuck around, and I got to see The Babadook with 20 teenagers. Oh, you haven't lived until you've seen The Babadook with 20 teenagers.
Does the movie play for teenagers?
Yes, although I had spoken earlier with some other students who had seen it on their own, I'm guessing on Netflix. They all hated it, and the conclusion I reached was, A, there's a big difference between watching something on your laptop in your bedroom and watching it on a big screen with really good sound with 20 other people in the dark. And the other conclusion I reached, because I hadn't seen it in a while, is the first 45 minutes are really slow. I mean, she's doing the slow build. And some of my students don't have patience for that.
Sure.
And they sort of bail.
I just remember thinking, like, some of what it's about seems fairly adult. And so I wasn't sure if could relate to it.
Well, teenagers can relate to it, I think, in some cases too well, because the one comment of all the stuff, we had a little discussion afterwards, and I was sort of telling them some of the stuff that I took away from the film, but there was one young lady who said that she didn't like the film, and I said, why? And she said, I'm not saying it isn't a great film. I thought it was a great film. I'm paraphrasing. She didn't use these words. This is the phrase I always use. It was working on her in a way that she didn't want to be worked on. The whole idea of a mom who's against you was a little too intense.
Honestly didn't even occur to me that, like, oh, they're watching it from the kids, because I watch it from the parents' point of view. Didn't occur to me they're watching it from the kids' point of view.
Oh, yeah. And when the mom turns, it's really disturbing. Norm DePlume on Exorcist 3.
Pazuzu spends movie using garden shears incorrectly.
Matt Sullenberger of Dress to Kill. Things Kane hates. Adulterous housewives. The Dutch.
And we usually shy away from reading seven-word reviews from our staff, so to speak. But I really have to give this one credit. I think so far this is one of my favorite ones of the entire month. Our very own Heath Holland on Halloween. Smith's Grove Hospital shouldn't offer driver's ed.
El Topo of Tales of Halloween. Adrian Curry's Twitter account is very important.
Very nice. And just tonight, someone posted a review of, oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was Tales of Halloween. It was Crimson Peak, and the review revolved around the fact that you liked it, and so the person who left the review was glad they liked it too.
Oh,
I'm horribly confused.
All right.
Joshua Ochoa on Christine. The reason I do not use Uber.
Marcus Killerby of American Mary. Shoehorns rape in like, well, like rape.
Gabby Farrow on White Zombie. Lugosi's zombie dance murders death, breaks trance.
Nice.
I like the alliterative ones. Yeah. I like the rhyming ones.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. I'm out.
And this is the last one. And this is actually from the Music Box of Horrors. Michael Piccoli on Trick or Treat. The implied choice in title is bullshit.
Thank you guys again for leaving so many good seven-word reviews.
Really terrific.
Every year we say, well, these were the best group, but really, these were the best group. Every single one of them was a winner. So thank you guys. You guys have been super awesome. Please continue to do it. There's a few days left in October. Don't be left out on all of the fun. Let's talk marathons, my man.
Marathons. So this is going to be weird. Because I sort of came here tonight, as I said, to talk about how everything turns to shit. Like, there's this thing that you like, and it's great, and then it keeps going year after year after year. And somehow, whether it's the thing itself, or you, because you're getting older, something changes. But sometimes I don't think it's you, meaning I don't think it's us, I don't think it's me, I don't think it's you. The corollary I'm thinking of is when I was a young man in the, I believe it was the late 20s, I used to go see Jimmy Buffett live. And it was this fun thing. And he was sort of this niche cult artist. And it was a lot of fun. And then after a couple of years, he started playing bigger places. And the place became invaded by, for lack of a better word, bros. Fraternity boys, weekend alcoholics, that it just became too big and too awful, and we stopped. Ebertfest started really small. I remember the first Ebertfest. It was like a garage sale. It was this do-it-yourself thing. Not many people know about it, but eventually everything becomes a victim of its own success. And Patrick can remember that one massacre back when it was still at the Music Box, that was oversold and really oppressive.
The Clive Barker year.
Yes. Yeah. And there were too many people there. And yeah. We've talked about this
before. The
bathrooms
flooded. And
the toilet was running through the lobby into the thing. And it just had a bad feeling. So obviously you want these things to be a success, but there's a limit to the success. So maybe to keep it something people would want to go to, they should limit the number of tickets they sell, because in any of these larger, older theaters, when every seat is taken, it's odd. Yeah. There's an odd, it's very, very difficult to describe, but it's this very uncomfortable, oppressive thing.
It's uncomfortable even when not every seat, because these theaters aren't built to be sat in for 24 hours. You look at, you know, theaters now that are being retrofitted with giant recliners, and you're like, oh, that I could do 24 hours easy. These theaters are not like that. So the least you can do is offer a little bit of elbow room and some breathing space. But if everyone's on top of each other, it's particularly miserable.
So I feel like I have egg on my face because
that's why I call you egg face.
Because for reasons that we've talked about in the past, I had stopped going to the Music Boxes marathon, and this was my first time back.
Right.
And I was just there to stick my toe in the water, and I was just there to get a lay of the land. And now that it's not the only game in town, I thought I didn't have to show up at 5 o'clock in the morning anymore because I'm insane and there's one seat that I want. More on that seat in a second.
Oh, boy.
So my wife said she'd go with me, which I was happy about, because I think another thing that's changed is we used to go as a pretty big group.
Yeah.
And that was really part of the fun.
Sure.
And I'm thinking that maybe we can start maybe getting a group to go again, because it was very clear at the Music Box of Horrors that it was my wife and I, and that was it.
Okay.
So we didn't have to get there at 5 in the morning. We left the house at 9. Traffic was insane, which makes me wonder, what are these people doing driving into the city at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning? What is it? There was no sporting event?
No.
Is it the truth that things are so bad that everyone now works 7 days a week, and half of the people in the suburbs work in the city, and half of the people in the city work in the suburbs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were all working. Maybe they were just going to go to the museum or the zoo or making a day of it.
Well, that was odd because it was raining, actually.
Really?
Pretty hard at one point. Oh, yeah, the line had there was a line, and we sort of had to reconfigure the line. You would have been so proud of me. I took the responsibility of raising my voice and telling everyone that if we just snaked the line in the opposite direction, more people would be under the marquee and be dry.
Nice.
And I said, I am a high school teacher. I know what I'm doing when it comes to lines. And everyone laughed and they moved and then everyone stayed dry. But it was really coming down.
Yeah.
And then to show that the new management at the Music Box are human beings, they let us in early, which never happens. Jan and I left the house at 9. We got there at 10. Doors were supposed to open at 11. They opened at 10:30. They let us into the lobby, which I thought was a decent enough thing.
Yeah.
Because what the Music Box did was they sold 250 tickets at $25 the first 2 weeks in October. And then they sold another 250 tickets at $30 in advance the week before the show. But they announced in advance that there would only be 50 tickets available at the door. So that was my motivation for getting there.
Right.
Early-ish.
Right.
So at 11 o'clock, they let us in, and I make a beeline for my favorite seat, and there is a King Kong blanket thrown over both of those seats. Strange. So I took the two seats next to it. I'm not complaining. The seats I speak of have extra legroom. Patrick knows what I'm talking about. And I was so sort of cynical about the whole enterprise because I really wasn't the biggest fan of the lineup.
Right.
And then, and here's the good news, folks. The new general manager at the Music Box seems like a really nice guy, and he used to program a theater in Arizona. In Arizona, he had a friend who was crazy into horror.
Nice.
The general manager contacted the friend. The friend helped him curate the Music Box of Horrors. And then the friend shows up, introduces the films, and as the day goes on, I'm like, I was wrong. This guy knows what he's doing.
Interesting.
Just because it's not what we're used to.
Right.
Or the way I would program it, which is a big problem. He's getting up there and introducing the films. He really seems to know what he's talking about. Adam was bemoaning the lack of trailers at the massacre. Every film at the Music Box of Horrors had a trailer package that was specifically tailored
awesome.
For the film.
Yeah.
Either films from the same year or films from the same theme. And that's so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun. And then they had a gentleman whose name escapes me who
Joe Madry.
Who wrote a book on Wes Craven. And this is where we have the attack of the hipster douchebags. Will, the gentleman who programmed the festival, and this author get up on stage And they're doing an interview that's very interesting because he's telling Wes Craven stories. Very interesting Wes Craven stories after the first movie, Serpent in the Rainbow. And no one in the theater is paying attention.
That's wild.
Because even though there's two people on stage with microphones, I have the right to do whatever I want to whenever I want to. And that was very disturbing.
That's a bummer.
And the two of them were so into it, it was like we were eavesdropping on a basement conversation. So I thought maybe they could open it up and sort of make it a little bit more, this is the show, or maybe have the audience ask questions or something. But just like when I saw Jackie Brown at the Chicago International Film Festival, I don't understand why you would come here
right,
and not listen to these two guys.
Right.
Serpent in the Rainbow was a great film to show first. I've only seen it once, the weekend it came out.
I haven't seen it in years.
And I remember being impressed. And one thing I was patting myself on the back for was I was watching the film and enjoying the hell out of it. And then the last 10 minutes takes a turn. A really obvious turn if you've been watching the movie. And indeed, the two of them revealed that the studio was not happy with the ending. And so the last 10 minutes is reshoots, where we're going to punish the bad guy and kill him dead, which I thought sort of took on this racist overtone.
Right.
Because then you get, well, this is a film about a black man who did something very bad to a white man. And then the white man does something even worse to him. I mean, it was... because the film is so different than other Wes Craven films. And it's sort of this honest attempt to do sort of this nonfiction thing, or at least what the author claims is nonfiction. And it's still scary, but it's also very beautiful to look at and really intriguing. And it was a great film to start with.
Nice. Scream Factory is putting out a Blu-ray of that in the next few months. So I'm kind of holding off on revisiting it until then.
The two of them during the little interview said, they both said they would kill to see the original cut.
Yeah, right.
With the original ending.
Right.
Because my guess is it was a little bit more, not downbeat, but not as frenetic and batshit crazy as what we get. And that it more closely matched the rest of the film.
Right.
Because do you remember the film at all?
Vaguely.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah.
And there's one scene, I don't think this is a spoiler, where someone is buried alive, and Craven gives us what seems like 5 minutes of black screen with the sound of the victim's breathing. And I'm like, that's really gutsy. And originally, when I saw it in the theater, it worked. It worked. It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I always felt on home video like people would think their machines had broken or something.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that he made that in the 80s. You know, he had kind of made a name for himself doing Nightmare on Elm Street, and then he does Deadly Friend. I mean, he's doing these horror movies that essentially go out to a teenage audience, whether or not that was what he was intending. Obviously, with Deadly Friend, it was. But Serpent in the Rainbow is very... adult.
Yes.
It's not made for teenagers, you know? And I like that he was able to kind of do both, because then over a decade later, he does Scream and he can still speak directly to young people, you know, but kind of work both sides of it. I don't know.
And this time, one of the things I like best about Serpent in the Rainbow is the way it mixes the politics of the region in, that the overthrow of baby Doc Duvalier is like a plot point.
Yeah.
So it's, we can be adults, and
there can
be politics and voodoo.
So this year, again, I've gotten spoiled, because I do miss The Massacre, you know, or the Music Box of Horrors, whatever. I mean, I do miss it, because it used to be a lot of fun. But I know I'm also spoiled, because now I'm just like, yeah, but it's so easy to just stay here and pick what I watch and all this. I promised my wife that I wouldn't do 24 hours straight this year, even at home. So I tried to spread it out over 2 days, and it didn't work out so great because all these other obligations kept coming up, and I got to go pick up these people and be here at this time. And so I was never really able to get a groove going. But I'll talk about what I did watch. I started with Bone Tomahawk because I knew that I had to review it, so I figured I would get a head start. I won't talk about it very much because I had already written the review and it's up at fthismovie.net. for a while, I had heard that it had some horror elements, and for a while, it's like a pretty straight Western, and I thought, well, I shouldn't be watching this in October. This is the wrong way to start my scary movie marathon.
And then the final third
starts. And I thought, oh, no, okay, this works. You haven't seen it yet.
No, my son had read the script online ages ago, and he was telling me this is one to look out for.
Yeah.
There were all these films he was sort of giving me an early advanced heads up on.
I think you will like it a lot.
Oh, I know I will, based on your review that landed today.
Yeah. So I won't say much more about it. If you like Westerns or really brutal horror movies, if you're a Kurt Russell fan, and who isn't, check it out. It's on VOD and iTunes. It's playing in limited release. If you can see it in a theater, you should, because it's a Western, and those are usually pretty good in a theater. Although, it's not like it's beautifully shot, but it's not a Western that's like all about big, wide open vistas and all that kind of stuff. So it still plays at home, but check it out. What's after Serpent and the Rainbow?
And it's as if I'm so impressed when any endeavor seems to me that the people in charge sat down at some point and said, what worked? Let's keep doing that. What didn't work? Let's fix that. The example I always use is there's an airline that I'm in love with where it's like they sat down and said, what do people hate about flying? And then they fixed it. Imagine the fun. So at the Music Box of Horrors, when the first film is over and that interview is done, the lights come up and there's an intermission. A nicely, maybe 15 minutes.
Okay.
Ooh,
yeah,
imagine
right.
That. And that it's been figured into the schedule so they're not running behind. And I thought, all the years of going to all these marathons, the break was never long enough. Often they kept the lights out.
Yeah.
It was really nice. And the other thing that was nice is, until the evening, it never really got too crowded at all. So,
which used to be the case, I feel like.
Yeah, which is one reason why I was so stuck on the idea that for the first few films, you should do chronological order, because it originally always started with the silent movie,
right,
which not everyone is into.
Right.
And then it was sort of the equivalent of a soft opening.
Right.
Whereas the films went on, they got sort of more hardcore, and the hardcore night people came out.
Right.
And then I would say, no, sir, and I would go home. And it was perfect. Because part of this podcast is how old I'm getting and the degree to which I need to feel coddled and all of my needs need to be met. But, of course, when you leave the house, you're giving up on that. The bottom line is the new Music Box of Horrors is terrific.
Great.
They have sort of said, this is something that we want to do and we want to do it right. And it's, in retrospect, I wish I had stayed for more.
Sure.
But I still have the stink of
right.
Any minute this is going to go south. So the next film was Shockwaves, which I had never seen.
Okay.
And this was the only bad thing. And I guess they were very... they were very diligent about getting prints. They showed a lot of prints.
Which is great.
The problem was the Shockwaves print was pink.
Hmm.
And it really would have helped if it wasn't, although I'm old enough where that pinkish has sort of this nostalgic charm.
Sure.
That, oh, imagine all the projectors this has gone through. And I had never seen it before, and it's not the greatest film, but I'm telling you, for the second film at the Music Box of Horrors, it was the perfect film.
Really?
Because...
That's so surprising. You had said on Saturday, like, oh, it really played with an audience.
Oh, it played.
I cannot think of, like, what people would have responded to.
The amateurish community theater-style acting
okay.
of every person on the boat except Brooke Adams.
Right.
She's clearly...
And Peter Cushing, cashing a check.
Peter Cushing is cashing a check. This is when he really didn't care anymore. And I have to tell you, spoiler alert, John Carradine's in it.
That's right.
And he is a delight.
Right.
And he's this irascible son of a bitch. And he gets every laugh he's supposed to get. And he's dispatched pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And when he's discovered floating in the water, you can sense in the audience, oh no, we want to have more of him. And in fact, there's one, it's about a bunch of people on this boat. They've chartered this boat and they're taking a pleasure cruise, and then everything possible can go wrong. Everything possible, John? Yes. Nazi zombies left over from World War II. And so everyone on the boat except Brooke Adams does not know how to act. And there's one guy whose job it is to be the pain in the ass, and he's always complaining, and he's adult. And my wife was surprised that he wasn't killed in a horrible, mean-spirited, ugly way, because we want to see him punished.
Right.
When he dies, it's like, that's it?
Yeah.
Haven't you ever seen a horror film?
I felt like that was a lot of the movie. I just saw it for the first time maybe a year ago, and I felt like it's okay. It's like a different enough zombie movie, and so I understand its place, and Brooke Adams is great.
I think its reach exceeds its grasp. There's some.
It
really
never delivers on the things that you think it's going to deliver on.
But it has what it. The whole thing has this air of what it could have been.
Sure.
Because the zombies rising from the water is creepy.
Yeah.
But then they have nowhere to go, so they just repeat the same six guys.
Right.
Because that's how many costumes we had, and that's what we had makeup for. And my wife on the way home was saying, imagine if they had 20 Nazi zombies or 50.
Eight.
How that they could have taken what was creepy and then sort of built on it.
Right.
I don't really think the film works.
Yeah.
But I had a hell of a time.
That's great. No, I'm surprised. I just, when I, my memory of watching it was that it's slow. And so I was surprised to hear that it played with an audience, because it's not really a movie of like big moments.
No, but
are no payoffs even.
I think it was perfect for the second film.
Sure.
And the trailer package beforehand was Dead Snow and The Sound of Music. And I have to say, first of all, in the middle of a horror festival, it's like, what do you call it when you have the little sherbet to cleanse your palate?
Yeah.
Anything on screen that's not horror, and I'm not suggesting you overdo it, but you should have seen the audience. They just lit up. It's like, there's the fucking Sound of Music. And it's the real trailer.
Right.
And it was great. And then my biggest regret is that I didn't stay for Profondo Rosso, which I should have. But I was very excited.
A 35 millimeter print of Profondo Rosso.
Don't get me started. And because I was so excited to get back here, to watch Nightmare Castle with you.
But I would have held it. I would have waited till you got here. I appreciate that you came for that, but I would have held it. I was honestly surprised when you texted and said, "Like, we're leaving." I was like, "Really? You saw two movies?"
That was a mistake.
Yeah,
because it wasn't until I went back the next day that it sort of sunk in that this is really the way it used to be, and I should have stayed for the whole thing.
Yeah. I like that they showed Shockwaves too, even though I know I wasn't there, but I like that they showed a movie that most of the audience probably had not seen. That may not be fair to assume.
Well, I'm not sure, because the people who sat next to us, who were just the most delightful people. Because remember, we had a couple years where the drunk guy sat behind us?
Always. It was like they found us.
They would shout things that weren't funny.
It was miserable.
These people were delightful. The woman was a college student who's currently attending college in Chicago, and her boyfriend. And her father, who's a big horror fan, took the train for 6 hours from somewhere.
That's cool.
To be at the Music Box of Horrors. The previous weekend, they had all three attended the massacre, and he was wearing one of those work shirts you can get at Flashback.
Oh, yeah.
With the Shockwaves poster on back.
Big Shockwaves fan,
was a big Shockwaves fan. And you know where we sit, there's the extra leg room.
Yeah.
They had brought these little, how can I describe them? They open up, they fold out, and they're like little stools for your feet.
Oh.
So it you're sort of cobbling together a recliner from the theater seat and the stool. Thinking. And you know how everyone uses the area in front of the seats as a hallway that everyone's constantly.
Yes.
This was preventing them from doing that.
Wow.
Because it was the greatest thing.
I have the lineup pulled up now, and it looks, I mean, it's a nice mix of like a couple things that people have no doubt seen,
but
and then
please,
some stuff that
please
people...
note. This is my shame, that because I was so stuck the way things used to be, I just couldn't get over that they would show the silent film at 10:30.
Yeah.
And that's just stupid. Because when I got back on Sunday, one of my former students said, "You should have been here for The Unknown. It wasn't just the Mighty Wurlitzer Theater organ. They had a piano and a guitar."
No kidding.
And the group had worked out a score.
Wow. That's cool.
So my bad. And that's cool. Also, back to the blanket.
Yep.
So there's the seat that I love, and I get in the theater, and it's covered with a blanket. It was a King Kong Afghan. And throughout the entire first movie, no one sat down. What is this? And then Shockwave started, and two of the vendors... came in the theater and sat down. And no offense, I don't think they should be allowed to do that.
No, I agree. That's not cool.
But I will not begrudge them. I realize that my desire to sit in one seat out of 500 is a little loony. And I love the seats we were in.
Good.
And again, I can't stress this enough. Next year I plan to go for most of it.
Right.
It's like I was blinded by past experience. Sure. And then we came here and I saw most of Wormwood.
Yeah. More than I realized. Well, let me back up.
Yeah.
So I'm still on Friday, I think, right? So after Bone Tomahawk, I watched a movie called Gravy, which is a new movie written and directed by James Rodet, who starred for like 7 or 8 seasons on the USA series Psych.
Oh.
And I know he's a big horror fan because he's been a talking head in a few things. He's on that His Name Was Jason documentary. I had to review it for another outlet. I was like, well, this kills two birds. I'll watch a horror movie and I'm watching it so that I can write a review. It's a newer movie and it's being distributed by Scream Factory. There's a handful of titles that they are distributing, and actually now they're actually making their first original movie. But so it's out on DVD and Blu-ray from Scream Factory. It's pretty good. It's okay. I found it very frustrating. So it's essentially it's a horror comedy about the workers at a Mexican restaurant. It's Halloween night. Three strangers come into the restaurant and tie everyone up, and they are cannibals, and their plan is to eat everyone in the restaurant. And so it's the effects are from KNB. It's very bloody, but because it's in the context of a comedy, you can handle it. You know, the gore is kind of funny as opposed to like, oh, this is so gross. There's a lot to like in it. It's also very frustrating. It's manic. There's like too many goofy sound effects. And every once in a while, some 80s song will come on the soundtrack just because I guess it's ironic given what's on screen. So, you know, someone's being killed and they're playing I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight and that's funny. No, it's not. The lead of the movie is an actress named Sutton Foster, who I'm not really familiar with. Apparently she's a big Broadway star. She looked so much like Elizabeth Barrage from Amadeus and the Funhouse that I ended up liking the movie more because I was just pretending that it was Elizabeth Barrage. So that is a very lukewarm recommendation, but it, you know, when you're watching this many movies, you got to kind of mix it up. So there has to be stuff that's like good and serious and maybe slow. And then there has to be goofy shit like this. And so it fit the bill. After that, I watched Eaten Alive, the Tobe Hooper film, which is just out on Blu-ray from Arrow.
Yeah.
And I was very excited because I put the disc in for the first time, and the menu gives you this option, play movie with introduction. And I thought, I will play the movie with introduction. Of course I will. So I press enter, and Toby Hooper's face comes up on screen. I'm like, this is amazing. He's going to talk about Eaten Alive. He's like, hey, I'm Toby Hooper. Hope you enjoy Eaten Alive. Enjoy the colors. Movie.
Like, oh, boy.
Thanks, Toby. I'm glad you could set aside an afternoon.
Oh, boy.
The movie is a mess. It's crazy. I like it, again, as a Toby Hooper apologist.
That's my memory of it. I haven't seen it in a dog's age.
It's nuts. Robert Englund in a very early performance. Mm-hmm. William Finley. And what's his name in the lead? I'm blanking on his name. He was a drunk, I think, in real life. And he's almost the whole movie.
I'm trying to remember.
I'm so upset that I can't remember his name. So this is like, Jesus. Robert Kerman is in it as well. No, I have the wrong Eaten Alive. Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the cannibal one. Robert Kerman is not in that one. Sorry, Neville Brand. Neville Brand.
Because, what was it that, you bring up Eaten Alive and then suddenly we're... could they have shown that at an early massacre?
Very possibly.
I'm thinking that's the last time I saw it.
Okay.
Or maybe at a horror convention they like showed it in the movie room somewhere.
Maybe.
Back when I used to go to all these conventions. Because I still remember when Englund shows up, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
I knew you win.
It's a mess. And again, it was a movie that there were all kinds of problems during the production. I think Toby Hooper didn't even direct the whole thing. Make your jokes now. I don't know the story, but I know it was a disaster of a production. So the fact that it's cobbled together at all, and again, I enjoy it, but it's almost like Toby Hooper was afraid that he made the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and everyone saw it and loved it. And they're like, oh my God, it's so scary. And his contention has always been that it was supposed to be funny, kind of, and crazy over the top. And apparently feeling like that went over everyone's heads, he was like, well, I'll make Eaten Alive and make sure everyone knows that this is crazy and over the top and supposed to be funny. It's about a guy who runs this little hotel and there's a killer alligator in the swamp that he feeds people to. Check it out if you want. I don't know. I enjoy it. After Eaten Alive, I rewatched Madison County, which is a slasher film from a couple years ago. It's the first movie from Eric Englund, who's been on the podcast a couple of times. He made Contracted. He made a movie called Roadside. This was his first movie. He made it when he was like 22. For a movie made by a 22-year-old, it's very impressive. It's just some teenagers in the woods, and there's a guy with a pig mask chasing them and killing them. It's not... I had seen it once years ago before I had ever talked to Eric, and felt like this is competent, but pretty unoriginal. And my feelings about it haven't changed all that much. I think I liked it a little bit better this time because I think I was appreciating the skill with which it is made, given his age and relative inexperience at the time. But it's so much like so many other movies that I have a hard time pointing people to it, you know?
So are you starting Friday night because you know it's going to be Filmus Interruptus and
correct,
you want to get enough of them in?
Correct.
Because the Music Box of Horrors doesn't start till Saturday at noon.
Right. But because I knew I wasn't going all night Saturday, I tried to squeeze in a few on Friday as well.
It.
Yeah. And I finished out Friday by rewatching Pet Sematary because I just bought the Blu-ray. It looks great on Blu-ray.
That's my next question.
Yeah, no, it looks really good. I'm so used to seeing this kind of washed out DVD, and I was like, wow, this really looks terrific.
Is that Scream Factory?
No, just Paramount.
The label.
Yeah, Best Buy had it on sale a few weeks ago for like $6, and I thought, well, how can I pass that up?
Sold.
There's a commentary from Mary Lambert that I'm interested in listening to. I haven't heard it yet.
I would like to hear that.
I have such a weird relationship with Pet Sematary. The last time I saw it was at a massacre, the first time I ever stayed the full 24 hours. And I had a really hard time with it because my son was at basically the same age as little Gage Creed in the movie. And it really, as you were saying earlier about the Babadook, was hitting me in a way that was uncomfortable. Plus, I was in an audience of hipster douchebags who literally laughed when Lewis Creed cradles his dead son in his arms and screams no. They laughed because that's better than feeling something. So I'm fascinated by Pet Sematary because, again, it is such a mix of like genuinely upsetting emotional stuff and then like kind of schlocky gore. And for me, it all kind of works, but
it defines a mixed bag. And of course, we know who else is in that movie. Your
Denise Crosby, Fred Gwynne,
your nemesis.
I mean, the thing is, it doesn't even belong in the movie. It doesn't.
No,
it has really, no business.
It comes across as
there's all this stuff in the movie. So I've never read Pet Sematary.
It comes across as a non sequitur. Yeah. Oh, and there's this too.
Did I ever tell you about my sister? Oh no, it was fucked up. Yeah. Let me tell you for a second. I've never read the book, but the movie feels like there's all this stuff in it that probably should have been cut out. They have like a maid who maybe has stomach cancer and she hangs herself and it's like, that should be the first thing to go. And Zelda, I mean, all this stuff. Like, how did this make it in the movie?
When you adapt a book, there's things.
You got to leave stuff out.
Yeah.
But Stephen King maybe adapting his own book was like, well, no, I got to have this. I got to have this.
Everything but the kitchen. No, I can't make that pun work.
If there was a kitchen sink in the movie, it would have been a killer kitchen sink because that's the only thing Stephen King hasn't done yet. Without Zelda, am I still talking about that movie? I don't know. So it's like she doesn't belong in the movie, and yet it's the best thing in the movie.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting. I don't like it. So I go to bed, wake up the next day.
Now it's Saturday. And I'm on the way to the music box.
Yeah. Actually, no, you're already there by the time I start again because I have to take my kids to swimming. And then there's this errand and this errand and this errand. So you're probably halfway through Serpent in the Rainbow by the time I start up again. And I started with Suspiria, which is the first time I've watched Suspiria since the first time I saw Suspiria, which was with Doug back in like 2002 or 2003.
Your Severwood review mentioned that.
Yeah. And we watched it, and I'd never seen an Italian horror film, and we couldn't make sense of any of it. And so it immediately became this game of us talking in exaggerated Italian accents and just saying, at the ballet. And we goofed on it, and I've never revisited it. And so now that I've done my famous turnaround on Italian horror movies, I was like, nope, this is the year. I'm going to rewatch this. So I watched the old Anchor Bay DVD. It is currently in the process of being restored by Synapse, which I cannot wait for.
Yeah.
Because
that film, the way it looks, is very important.
It's everything, basically. Yeah. I mean, this time I loved it. It's so beautiful, and I have such a crush on Jessica Harper. It's still nonsense. I mean, I couldn't tell you what's going on a lot of the time. But I didn't care because, again, I just was letting the visuals and the goblin score, or as they're credited in the movie, the goblins, kind of just wash over me, which is what you have to do with a lot of these movies. And I really loved it, and I cannot wait for that Blu-ray.
A few years ago, I ran into Jessica Harper at the Printer's Row Book Fair. She is now an author of children's books, and she had one that was very interesting. In fact, I think I was gonna buy it for your son who was younger then.
And I
was showing interest in the book, which she seemed to appreciate. There wasn't anyone else at her booth, and then I discovered something I had actually read about in Video Watchdog. She does not want to talk about any of the films.
Really?
She is very uncomfortable talking about the films, and so I just kind of
interesting
let her be.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I recently saw Shock Treatment for the first time.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really like.
There's parts of it I really like. I think
they made a big mistake by not having the original cast come back.
That might have helped.
There's a couple really good songs, and yeah. I think the basic premise, which sort of anticipates reality TV,
sure.
that the entire town of Denton, Texas, is a television show. More than half of it doesn't work at all. I think Cliff DeYoung is a really bad choice to play both Brad Majors and the brother we never heard about in Rocky Horror Picture Show, Farley Flavors.
You're pretty familiar with this movie.
I think I've memorized all the songs. I can wow. sing Little Black Dress.
The songs were good. Richard O'Brien is a good songwriter.
The father sings this song about what it's like to be a man.
Yeah.
A man should be the boss, wear the pants, and call the toss. A man should be the... And he's mowing his lawn. That I wish it worked better because, again, it has this little... What lies within it is the possibility to be as great as Rocky Horror. And something's weird with Rocky Horror. They're now showing it on cable
yeah.
a lot.
And at
month.
The theater near us on Friday nights.
At 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so there's this thing. But when it first showed up on cable, I watched it again, you know, without the stuff flying through the air and
right.
the people up on stage. And that's a hell of a thing. I mean, Richard O'Brien really was a fan of horror and science fiction. It's interesting how it weaves everything together.
I like a lot of it. The whole middle always, I'm like, oh, this was a bad idea. Every time I revisit it, like the first 20 minutes or everything through Time Warp, I'm like, this movie's so much fun. This is really great. And then really up until the finale when they're up on stage doing the statue song, the movie just kind of sags for me. I mean, it comes alive every once in a while. Meatloaf's number.
I was
number.
Just going to say, Meatloaf's number's terrific.
Things pop up and you're like, oh, right, good. And then I just kind of lose my interest. Shock Treatment. Oh, so when I was watching Shock Treatment, Jessica Harper is in it and she sings. It's a musical. And she, of course, plays Phoenix in Phantom of the Paradise, which is like one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I had written something on Twitter to the effect of, I'm watching Shock Treatment. I don't love it, but I could listen to Jessica Harper sing all day. I love her voice. And some random idiot, I don't know, like picks it up and responds, like retweets it with a comment that says like, how long have you been fully deaf or something?
Oh, come
which,
on.
Which, whatever. I don't give a shit, but... And I was so... I wanted to say, like, well, how long have you been an asshole? But what's the point? Like, what's to be gained by engaging with some random person? But am I wrong? Does she have a horrible voice?
She has a beautiful
singing voice. It's subjective, I know, but...
We can argue the little dance she does in...
You're not going to say anything bad about the dance, are you? It's the greatest.
But, again, I have a feeling that because of some of the films she chose to appear in, and I don't know if it's Suspiria or Pennies from Heaven or maybe even one of the Woody Allen films, I think there may have been a time where she was getting...
Stardust Memories? Is that the one she's in?
She's in more than one because she's also in... But what I always forget she's in it. She's in Love and Death.
That's right.
Very small part,
yeah.
mostly at the end, that I think at some point she was getting a lot of unwanted attention.
Sure.
Because she was in these films.
Sure.
And I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, but Suspiria is great, and I'm going to watch it a lot more, especially once it comes out on Blu-ray.
And when that comes out, I want to see it, because in all honesty, I don't think I've seen it in 10 years. I used to have that big, thick special edition.
That's what I have, with the soundtrack and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I have still. Which has been out of print for a long time, I think. So I'm glad that I randomly bought it at Best Buy when they used to carry movies. We're almost caught up. After that, I watched Habit. Scream Factory is putting out the Larry Fessenden collection, mm-hmm. four films from Larry Fessenden. I'd never seen any of his movies except for one, which was more recent. I had a friend in grad school who was big into Larry Fessenden, and he had said that I should check him out. He said he does kind of these riffs on classic horror movies. So the other day I watched his first movie, which is called No Telling, which is sort of a riff on mad scientist movies. And then Habit is his vampire movie. Very kind of the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Very small, but really well done and captures a very specific kind of art scene in New York in the mid-90s. It's one of the it's like a, almost like a Vampire's Kiss, where you're never quite sure, is there actual vampirism going on, or is this a metaphor for something else? Very interesting and well done. I was glad I was by myself, because I feel like it's the kind of movie that if I had programmed with a room full of people, it wouldn't have really worked, because it's not quite a horror movie. I don't know. I was glad that I was by myself, because I felt like it wouldn't play as well to a group.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then that ended, and then I started Wormwood and thought I was further into it than I was, because I know when you got here, I was like, I think I'm about halfway, two-thirds.
No.
And then you saw the whole movie, basically.
I feel I saw the majority of it.
You did, I think.
And really liked it. It kept reminding me, the Coen brothers once gave an interview and said they like films that are peppy. And one of the films they gave as an example was Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, which shows you what they meant by peppy, right, which is just that it's always moving forward.
Right.
Even when it takes an opportunity to be a little slower in terms of pace, you like it when the film propels itself. And I got to say this about Wormwood. It's
like manic almost.
And then it keeps topping itself,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had watched it when it was out earlier this year. I think it was one of those that went to VOD and I rented it. And I was like, yeah, it was okay. It was kind of fun. It has kind of a Mad Max vibe, but it's pretty unoriginal.
It's Mad Max meets The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's still pretty unoriginal, although the things that I like are that it adds a few new elements to kind of the tropes of the zombie genre, whether it's like, I guess mild spoilers for Wormwood. One is they can be used to power vehicles,
yes,
but only during the daytime. And the other being the sister character.
That I thought was
great.
A really interesting twist that's actually explored.
Yeah, and it's one of the few times that a movie like this ends, and I actually hope that they kind of make a sequel, because I want to see where this goes.
Where would that go?
And I've heard that there's one like planned, but I don't know.
And I thought the filmmakers proved that, as opposed to the zombies, they have a soul, because there's a short monologue about three quarters of the way through. The car enthusiast talks about what they're going through isn't so bad.
Yeah.
And then he talks about what's bad.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's very cool.
Yeah.
That a film like this can slow down a little bit and actually inject some real live emotion. That was my favorite scene.
Yeah. And it really does help in a movie like this, because it is so much about, like, it's crazy. The camera's moving so fast. The sound is so loud and the heads are exploding.
And if you're going to kill that many people,
right,
it's nice if you make the people we're supposed to care about real human beings.
Right, right, right. And something you've said before about other characters in other movies who respect death, or I forget what it was that you said.
When we were watching it, because it's usually in terms of Westerns that you can tell the good guys, because death has meaning.
Right.
This means something. We stop, we bury, we say a few words.
Right, right.
And that was really true of the good guys in Wormwood.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fun. I liked it way more this time than I did the first time, for whatever reason.
And that was because I was watching it with you this
time. I assume so. It's on Netflix instant streaming right now. If you haven't watched it yet, you should.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to pay attention because of the accents and stuff, but whatever. But there's huge sections of the movie, and you actually missed some of that. Some of the first scenes with the sister. I don't even know when she first actually speaks in the movie. It might not be until near the end.
But that's
all of her stuff is handled without sound.
That's acting.
Without dialogue, I should say.
There's a scene about halfway through in a truck where the filmmakers are very cagey at introducing to you what's going on without hitting you on
all
the head.
All of that happens without dialogue. And everything in the truck, everything.
This is very cleverly done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we watched the movie that you came back for, which is Nightmare Castle, which I had bought on Blu-ray after reading your column on it.
Talk about the bargain of the year.
Yeah, four movies, right?
Three full-length movies.
Okay.
And a bunch of other extras, including an interview with the director before he died.
Yeah.
A really long interview with Barbara Steele, where she basically talks about her whole career.
Yeah.
A bunch of trailers. It's the total package. And I had watched it and really loved it. But watching it again with you and my wife was interesting because, if anything, well, first I'm going to let you talk.
I liked it a lot.
But I still can't shake the fact that all of these Italian horror films from this era, someone even commented on my original column that it wasn't just me with this crackpot theory. It's as if they're the work of two different filmmakers. That the first 15 minutes, oh my God, and the last 15 minutes, oh my God.
The template for that is Black Sunday.
Yes. Because it's, and maybe it's just that I'm losing patience as I get older or something, but the middle is a slog. Why do they feel that they can test our, because they know the end is so great? Why does the middle, and I even thought to a lesser degree that Crimson Peak had the same problem, that when you're dealing with a gothic romance,
sure,
the second act is tedious.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder with some of these movies, is it a budgetary thing, you know? Look at Death Proof. That was one of those things that he got right? The beginning and the end are real strong, and in the middle there's all this talk because that's all we have the money for, is to shoot this stuff. I don't know that that's true of Nightmare Castle, although it was interesting watching Nightmare Castle. I had Crimson Peak in my head the whole time, because you have the man who's marrying the woman for her money. You have a jealous third party.
Yeah.
You have the doctor who shows up to rescue the woman. It's Crimson Peak.
Well, it's, and at one point in Crimson Peak, I actually turned to Jan because I thought the woman's bodice was going to be ripped off. I'm not sure if it was, but I was going to say it's an actual bodice ripper, which is what they used to call these
tales
things.
Tales of ribaldry.
It's a ribald. But
this won't do.
But I love these things, even with the slow middle.
It's like
universal horror films all over again, that I wish I could spend time in the castle, in the Nightmare Castle. And speaking of which, the castle that they rented for Nightmare Castle, it's like, how much do they charge you? Yeah. I mean, it's this really great.
It has its own crypt.
About
at
halfway,
one point when Dr. Smith says, like, he's down in the crypt, I thought,
the main
surely
actor,
he doesn't mean there's a crypt on the premises, right? Oh, no, there is.
The main actor, Patrick, and my wife kept referring to as Dr. Smith from Lost in Space, which made it very
what
hard.
What a world, what a world.
About halfway through, there's a scene out in the garden in front of this fountain, and it's like, I guess that's where all the money for special effects in this in the middle section went, because it's a big, real castle.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where even if it is slowing down, you can just appreciate the photography and the atmosphere and those kinds of things. So I really liked it.
And on the new Blu-ray,
with
a couple weird exceptions,
scratches.
It's just,
it looks great.
It looks like it was filmed yesterday.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite parts of Patrick's marathon, now it can be told. We're done with Wormwood. We're done with Nightmare Castle. And my wife and I are preparing to go home. And we come up the stairs. And our very own Mike Pomero of F This Movie is there, because he has showed up to watch the next movie. And driving home, it was like, you're in the hospital. And we're all coming to visit you at various times. And we're sort of taking shifts. Well, we all know Patrick's condition, and he shouldn't be alone. So, Mike, do you want to take 10 to midnight, and then we'll see? That's what it was like.
Yeah. So you left before Pieces.
Right.
That was a mistake.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Because another thing about the Music Box of Horrors I liked was this Will gentleman, who did a terrific job, got up there occasionally, and there were film trivia questions. And if you answered correctly, you got a DVD.
Okay.
What's not to like? And the last game was he would call out the tagline, the advertising line of a movie, and you had to tell what movie it's from. And some of them were really hard.
It's exactly what you think it is?
One of them was...
It's exactly what you think it is, or was it You Don't Have to Go to Texas for a Chainsaw Massacre?
That's it.
Okay.
That's the one.
They're both great.
And of course, you're not going to throw out any tagline and not have someone in the theater know what it was. But again, I just thought sitting down and saying, and maybe at some point we should have trivia, and right. not obnoxious and drawn out. Right. It was maybe right. 10 minutes, but it was right. so much fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Because then you're rooting for the other people too, you know. You're all on the same team of loving horror movies. Have you ever seen Pieces?
No.
Okay. As soon as it was over, I turned to Mike and said, I'm pretty sure we have next year's commentary. I know I'm announcing that way ahead of time, but I fell in love with the movie the way that I fell in love with Sleepaway Camp that night that we all saw it, the screening of it with that Hiltzik was at. And I remember sitting in the theater. We had never done a commentary at that point, but I remember sitting there watching it thinking, we need to talk about this. We should do a commentary for this. And that's kind of how that was born.
The screening that Hiltzik was at as he sat there and said, why are you laughing?
This is my baby. That's how he introduced the movie.
And by baby, I mean woman's penis.
Yeah. Pieces is crazy and sort of terrible, but in a wonderful, absurd way. And I had a great time with it. And I hope it can be next year's commentary. And that's all I'll say.
Okay.
So you go to bed.
And here is my shame. Perhaps I'm too old for these horror marathons. I so wanted to see Frankenhooker on a big screen
yeah.
with an audience. I lay my little head down on my little pillow, and I set the alarm for 1:30.
Oof.
I'm going to wake up at 1:30. I'm going to drive like mad to the music box. I'm going to see Frankenhooker. And at 1:30, the alarm goes off, and I shut it off, and I go back to sleep. I mean, within seconds, yeah. it was no.
That is a good spot for that movie, because yeah. those overnight movies are hard, you know, yeah. and that's one that, like, you'd really wake up for. Because I noticed on the schedule, I believe the movie after that is Ganja and Hess.
Yes.
Which is a tough movie in that spot.
Yes.
I don't know what would be a great spot for Ganja and Hess, but that's rough.
I would suggest, and here this is just metaphysical speculation, that Ganja and Hess should have been first or second.
Earlier would probably yeah. be better.
And they were advertising that they had an uncut 35mm print, which I'm assuming is the unrated Blu-ray.
Right, right, right.
But I really wanted to see it with an audience because I am of the opinion that Patty Mullen's performance in that film is delightful. But I'm sorry I let you down. I let my family down. I let the parish priest down. It has been 38 years since my last confession. I lied a lot. I took the Lord's name in vain 6,253,000 times. For these and all my other sins, I am very sorry.
Nice. You did go back.
Yes.
I have one more movie that I watched, but you did go back.
I did rouse myself and say this would be just too sad if I spent all that money and only
right.
saw two films.
Right.
So I rocketed back, and very early on Sunday morning, of course, people who don't like horror films are at church. So I think I got there in less than 20 minutes.
Wow.
It was crazy. And where's my brain? Hold on, it'll come to me. It's
all right.
been a long weekend. oh, Spider Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Which we had originally all seen
a couple years ago
at a
yeah,
previous massacre.
When it was at the Portage. I think that was the last one I was at.
It's crazy, and I'm not sure if I realized this last time or if I said it out loud. Quinn Redeker is in Spider Baby. He's Uncle Peter.
He's a comic genius in that movie.
Yeah, and he, more than anyone else, really seems to know what movie he's in.
He is so funny in that movie.
Okay, I'm glad to hear you say this, because, again, maybe I realized this at the last massacre.
He was on the soap opera.
He's in Ordinary People.
Oh, that I didn't put together.
He's Mary Tyler Moore's brother.
I've never seen Ordinary People.
In Ordinary People, they go to Texas to get some time away from their crazy son, and they're playing golf, and Mary Tyler Moore freaks out, and he's like, no, we just want you to be happy, Beth. We just want you to be happy. And man, is he good in Spider Baby.
Yeah. That movie's delightful. That was, I remember, the big surprise of that year, because I had never seen it and was pretty unaware of it, I think.
And it's more evidence that there are people, and by people, I mean filmmakers, who really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first sign, even though it got involved in some hell where the producers, it got held up. It
right.
wasn't released
right.
until years after it was made, that Jack Hill really knew how to make a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that movie's a ton of fun. And I'm assuming plays well with an audience.
It did, although I suspected...
They've been there for about 22 hours at that point.
...that there were still some sleepers, but this was the final surprise. A lot more people bailed. And
really?
So when I got back, it was maybe 7:30 in the morning, and I would say there's only about 100 people left.
No kidding.
I was really surprised.
Do you think it was the 1-2 punch of Ganja and Hess and Extro, which was the other movie that you missed?
Well, that's the other thing I was kicking myself over. And
it's the only print, right?
Which they brought in from Australia. So
yeah.
If there's any reason to see it. One of my former students was there and was telling me about it, but I was still sort of wiping a web from my mouth and eyes. And I'm not sure if I understood what he said.
You probably did. It's a crazy movie.
I had a couple former students there that stayed for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And were actually surprised that I was back. Oh, Mr. B, you're back. but you're old. Why would you? I don't know. I got to say, popcorn for breakfast, there's nothing better. And then I had never seen Trick or Treat before.
Okay.
And
this was the 86 one, right?
Mark Price and
yeah.
Ozzy.
Because when we were talking about ahead of time,
yeah,
I think
there's
you
too
thought,
many. There's too many goddamn
yeah,
movies called Trick or Treat.
There's Trick or Treats.
I thought it was the David Carradine
with David
one.
Carradine.
But I think I was led astray by the Music Box's own website.
Perhaps.
Because I think for a short period of time they had the wrong poster.
Perhaps. Was this a print of Trick or Treat?
I don't remember.
Okay. It's not very good.
No, but Will, again, the man in charge, said he did it deliberately because he wanted the last film to be, what word did he use? He didn't want anything challenging, and he wanted it to be, his words, like cotton candy.
Sure, which I'm all for. The old Massacre used to do that. I mean, the last movie was always something good, big. Fright Night, From Dusk Till Dawn.
It's The Shining.
The Shining.
Which is, I think, and that's where I thought you really wanted to end with something really,
yeah.
really good.
Yeah.
Which would get people to stay, I think.
Right.
Or to come back.
So I'm all for the last movie being something that's more just kind of fun.
Right.
I'm not programming it. Obviously, they knew what they were doing because you've said such great things about it. To me, Trick or Treat plays at 2 a.m. or
yeah.
midnight, you know, not 10 a.m. the next day.
I think I was so conditioned by previous marathons to think that the only material that was suitable for 2 a.m. were bad Italian horror films.
Yeah.
And I got to say, last week my column was about this new book series that's so great, and
yeah.
I would encourage all of you to go out and get the books. And in one of the books, they were talking about Giallo. And I got to the sentence, and I got to tell you, I thought about you.
Well, you mentioned it in the column.
I thought about you, young man. That he specifically singled out Lucio Fulci as the less talented.
No one's arguing that he's a great filmmaker.
And someone posted a 7-word review that I thought was really funny, that I'm paraphrasing horribly, but it was like, for a lot of these Italian schlockmeisters, when in doubt, zoom,
oh,
zoom,
yeah.
zoom.
So how's Trick or Treat? I saw it once years ago and didn't love it.
Here's another thing that made me think of you, because all I think about is Patrick.
Gene Simmons is in it.
Well, in a very tiny role, but, before Trick or Treat, they showed a whole bunch of trailers.
Nice.
Including The Fly.
Nice. Same
and
year, 86, right?
And it makes yeah. you sit there and think, I sure wish they were showing The Fly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not
but
quite cotton candy, but
I had the biggest wave of nostalgia, and it's similar to our love of canon films. at the beginning of Trick or Treat, the first thing on the screen is the old DEG logo.
Oh, nice.
And the minute that appears on the screen, you're like, oh, yeah. we're gonna see one of those. Because one of the trailers, or wait, maybe Trick or Treat is not DEG, but it might be. One of the trailers before Trick or Treat was King Kong Lives.
Oh, wow.
Which obviously DEG.
Yeah.
And do you remember the tagline on that one?
No.
He's back and he's not happy. And that got the biggest laugh of the 100 people left in
horrible.
The theater.
That is horrible. Trick or Treat seems like it would be ripe for a Scream Factory release. That's kind of right up their alley. And I'm sure they've tried, because if you look at their Facebook page, it is just a deluge of like, what about this? Why aren't you guys putting out this? Why aren't you putting out this? And they've been very open about, you know, we can't get the rights to that. Another company holds the right. That's Warner's. They don't license anything, you know. So I'm sure they've tried for Trick or Treat, but that seems like something that would be right up their alley.
And since the last time I was at the Music Box for a horror marathon, they have bought the space next to them and they've opened a lounge, which is just the most delightful thing. And they have adult beverages that are sort of themed to movies and with funny names and exotic ingredients. But here's something I'm wondering if you knew, Mr. Bromley.
Probably not.
My wife first noticed this, and then during one of the wonderful appreciated breaks, she took me back there. There are now a second set of bathrooms, because we have the original bathrooms from the Music Box, and then the lounge has its own bathrooms. So they've doubled the bathroom capacity, which is
Great.
Nothing but a good thing.
Yeah.
If you keep walking through the lounge, through the hallway where the bathrooms are, there is now an outdoor patio. Did you know this?
You told me. I didn't.
With tables and chairs, yeah. And at night, there's sort of Italian lights, and there's film reels on the fence, and that's where the food trucks were. And it's like, oh, my God. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting you should get drunk during the marathon. I think that's probably a bad idea. But it's nice to be able to get a drink.
Yeah.
And some food from a food truck.
Yeah.
And not have some guy yell, no outside food. because I don't mind not bringing outside food if you have a food truck with with a Philly cheese sandwich that's a religious experience. That's how good it was.
You can't have people there for 24 hours. They don't even have like a proper concession stand anymore, correct?
But they took steps to do a much better concession stand. What I wonder, because they closed the balcony at the patio, is if you were to go up to where the balcony seats, because there's a staircase to go up there, are there other bathrooms up there?
I don't know.
Because you know the bathroom is this incredible, it's a horror movie in itself.
You have to go down a set of cement stairs No, it's bad news. And there's not that many, so if it's crowded, whatever. The last movie I watched after Pieces was Scanners, which was the first time I'd seen it in a long time. And
your 7-word review was odd and cryptic, and I couldn't tell if you were being sarcastic.
I probably was.
Something about Ironside's body and Stephen Lack's charisma.
Right.
Oh, you were making...
Right.
Oh, I didn't... Okay, now I get it.
Okay. He's terrible, Stephen Lack.
Yes,
and Cronenberg has said as much, essentially, in that Cronenberg on Cronenberg book. He says, well, I cast him for his eyes, and that might have been a mistake, because he's not good. And I don't love the movie. I want to, because I love David Cronenberg. But for me, it's one of his weaker movies, especially from that period when he's really on fire.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, we talked just a few weeks ago about the head exploding.
I have such warm memories of that screening that I'm willing to forgive a lot.
And again, I can't ever put myself in that place where I don't know it's going to happen. I've never, you know, I'd seen it 20 times in Terror in the Aisles by the time I finally saw Scanners. So the impact had been diluted for me.
And there were a couple semesters where, as part of a larger lecture on horror, I had shown it to kids. Because I had this great story about how they did the special effect, and it never failed to get a reaction from the teen set.
No, it's amazing, but everything outside of that, like, isn't as good.
Oh, no. Although the last battle at the end tries.
It does, but when you really step back, you're like, what are they doing right now? They're just making faces at each other. I mean, they're doing some appliances to Michael Ironside, and Stephen Lack is bleeding a little bit. But it becomes a little bit silly when you watch them try to have a mind control battle just by, like, looking at each other.
Sure.
It doesn't seem to have quite as many ideas as a lot of Cronenberg movies. I mean, it's interesting, and, like, it's him kind of doing this almost like his sci-fi action movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that, you know, within his body of work, I think it's interesting, and it's certainly added a word to the cultural lexicon. We can make Joe, are you trying to scan me? You know, like, that's great. But I don't love the, you know, I don't love the movie. But it was a good way to end. It's fun and upbeat enough that I wasn't wishing that it would end, you know? Like,
yeah,
my life, I mean, like, I wasn't praying for death at that point.
Again, I can't get it out of my head ever since he said it. Our very own Adam Riske, this is weeks and weeks ago, once said that when he's sitting in a really bad movie, he will sometimes go out in the lobby for just a minute to remind himself that he will return to the lobby and that at some point the film will be over.
Yeah.
I just thought that was the most incredible thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so those were our marathons, kind of maybe a disappointment for you, the listener.
And
we've let you down.
And when you put the little header on this, it should be Patrick watches movies he loves, and JB, the 90-year-old cancer patient, complains. But here's what we should take away from this, because I think a lot of the disappointment was in my head. I really want to give the Music Box another chance next year and go for a lot more of it.
Yeah.
And try to get a group of people to go again, if not for the whole 24 hours, because I know that's difficult. But I was so impressed by what they're doing, and now I'm mad at myself for sort of not going there for a while, because I really think they're putting on a quality show.
This was only the third year that they've done it, and I had heard reports, at least from the first year.
This is the third Music Box of Horrors.
Correct.
See, in my mind, there was more.
This is the fourth? I thought this was only the third.
The numbers get weird, because I think it's the 12th. It's the 12th Massacre.
Okay.
But that would, because I think there was only one for seven. There were seven massacres at the Music Box.
Okay.
And then it split.
Okay.
But that would mean this is the fifth Music Box of Horrors, and it's not.
It's not. This might have been the fourth.
Because you said when
the first year they split, it was at the Portage.
Yes.
Jan was there. Doug was there.
And we did the podcast, all
right.
Four of us.
Then I did 2 years here, and then this year. So maybe this was the fourth Music Box of Horrors. My point is, I had heard reports from especially the first year that made it sound like it wasn't something that you wanted to be at. There was a lot of ironic distance and, like, people tearing up Twilight posters, and just it seems like they worked some stuff out, and maybe it's the change in management.
And there was also a lot of people who went to the first Music Box of Horrors not realizing that there had been a split.
Right.
A lot of people said, well, one that we go to, and they were surprised when it wasn't.
Right. So maybe you're okay having skipped a couple years, and now they've really worked it out, and now you know that it's something that you love and will return to.
This is really good, and if they're going to do it again next year, and why shouldn't they? It's a moneymaker. They should get this guy Will again, and I wish I could remember his last name, because he did a great job. And I wish I had stayed for more.
That's awesome. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Happy Scary Movie Month. Keep watching scary movies, writing your 7-word reviews at fthismovie.net. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook. Listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher. We're on Instagram. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Did I leave anything out?
Saturday, I'm going to get candy. We'll be right back.
thanks for listening to FS Movie.